From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, live tonight from the Republican National Convention at Madison Square Garden in New York City. Day two at the convention, and the thematic banner over the hall in Madison Square Garden tonight is People of Compassion. On stage tonight, Senate Majority Leader Dr. Bill Frist, former Red Cross head Senator Elizabeth Dole, California GOP muscle man moderate Arnold Schwarzenegger and Laura Bush. The First Lady may have a higher personal approval rating these days than her husband, but it was George W. Bush who championed compassionate conservatism in his 2000 run for the White House. In the 4 years that followed, the Bush White House governed from the right, enacted status quo busting social, economic, and foreign policy, put a distinctive and polarizing stamp on American politics. Pundits, politicians, and voters of all stripes are saying election 2004 is historic, big, an American fork in the road. It is above all a referendum on George W. Bush's current 4 years in the White House. Tonight on Point, President Bush's first term, its place in American history, and its impact on the race for the White House. How would you sum up the impact of 4 years of George Bush in the White House? How would you describe America's November 3rd fork in the road? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. But let's dive in tonight with sounds from another day of the Republicans' convention week.
In this different kind of war, we may never sit down at a peace table, but make no mistake about it, we are winning and we will win.
The president and I have very similar values. We grew up in West Texas together. Do we see eye to eye on every issue? Of course not. But do we understand each other's viewpoint? Absolutely.
What we're trying to say is that the world has to pay attention to the fact that there's a huge gap between the haves and the have-nots, and it's only growing, and it's growing drastically, and people are not able to have health care, they're not able to provide for their children.
I was picked up by a snatch squad for no particular reason that I can understand as of yet.
I think it's important that the Republicans put up people like Giuliani and McCain and Arnold Schwarzenegger, because that kind of Republican more closely resembles what the American people are like, as opposed to the people who now sit in the White House.
I think he's going to talk about the fact that there is a way to unite people of all parties, and that we shouldn't try and move forward in a separatist path. That if we try and think about the things that make our country great, just like they make our state great, we can do many things that people didn't think was possible in the past.
In this post-September 11th world, we need a president who, when he decides policy for the future of America, doesn't put his finger to the wind or take a poll, but looks into his mind and his heart and the international situation and says, I am going to do what is right for the American people and for the future of America. That is what George W. Bush does every single day. And we need our great president for 4 more years.
And there it is, sound from the day. We heard President Bush addressing the American Legion convention today in Nashville, Tennessee. First Lady Laura Bush on CBS's The Early Show. Moira Holland, a protester outside the convention. Another unidentified protester who was arrested today. Filmmaker Michael Moore. California Delegate Tom Nassif on what he expects to hear tonight from California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. And New York Governor George Pataki speaking in New York to New Hampshire delegates today. We are talking tonight about the impact of the Bush years. Joining me now here in Madison Square Garden are three of Washington's most distinguished correspondents, Dana Milbank of The Washington Post. Dana, good to have you with us. Maura Reynolds of The Los Angeles Times. Welcome, Maura.
Thank you.
And Joe Klein, senior writer and political correspondent for Time Magazine. Joe, great to have you.
Hi, good to be here.
So here we are. Everybody is describing this as an historic fork in the road on November 3rd. Joe Klein, I've heard you say just in the last couple of days, they always say that, but this time it's different. Why?
Because it is a historic fork in the road. Over the last 40 years, we had an unprecedented period of peace and prosperity in this country, and now we're faced with a really serious problem overseas, the war against Islamist radicalism. And also we're trying to sort out the effect of the global economy on the American economy and on American workers. Those are two huge things. And you know, this election is going to tell a great deal about how we deal with those issues.
We're going to be paying a lot of attention to what's going on the floor here in Madison Square Garden tonight. Kay Bailey Hutchinson, senator from Texas, has already gaveled the evening in. The theme is compassion. People of Compassion is the big banner tonight, but we want to take the measure in the brief time we have here of nearly 4 years now of George Bush's administration. Maura Reynolds, when George W. Bush came to office, many did not have big expectations of a big earth mover here. He had no popular majority. He came in with the Supreme Court's help. And people thought, well, maybe he'll just be kind of a caretaker president. He's turned out to be something quite different. How would you describe the impact of this presidency, the breadth of its impact? Is this a radical president?
This is certainly a president with a great deal of confidence, and while many people may not have had confidence in him when he came into office, he certainly had a lot of confidence in himself. And he, even if he didn't have a mandate at the polls, certainly acted as though he did. And he had a vision on his domestic policy, a few things that he absolutely wanted to get done. He set out to do them. You can argue about how well he has achieved them or not, but he certainly put in very large tax cuts, two different rounds of them. He got his education bill, his landmark education bill passed. You can argue about what it has achieved or not, but he certainly considered that a priority, and he achieved it. And he managed to get some kind of Medicare reform passed, and he wants to do more now, he says, on health care and Social Security. So he certainly does not lack for vision and goals, as was the shtick against his father.
So, Dana Milbeck, when you sit back and look at these 4 years now, how do you describe the changed face of the United States? Let's start with just at home that the George W. Bush presidency has wrought. If you had to characterize how the country is different now from nearly 4 years ago, looking at the issues that Maura has raised and perhaps more, how would you do it?
Well, the country is unrecognizable from what it was 4 years ago, as is the president and as the whole political system. I'd taken a look back at the president's or then-Governor Bush's acceptance speech 4 years ago. The word terrorism doesn't even appear in it, and of course it didn't. That's not what was on anybody's mind. I don't think we could overstate the extent to which September 11th changed his presidency, largely jettisoning the compassionate conservatism. It's sort of having a little cameo here today, but that largely had to go when he became a war president. It was replaced by two wars overseas, worldwide war against al-Qaeda, and at home new restrictions under the Patriot Act. None of these could have been contemplated, and obviously the president couldn't have seen those coming himself.
Joe Klein, the Republicans are embracing and applauding the changes that George W. Bush has brought in this hall this week. When you listen to their description of what the president has wrought, and, of course, September 11th is there. Perhaps that would have happened under any presidency. We assume it would have. To the extent we can tease these apart, how do you read what's being lauded on the floor of this hall? What's the impulse? What's the product of this presidency that the Republicans are putting up as their pride?
Single-mindedness, I think. Dedication to simple principles. I mean, last night was kind of extraordinary for a Republican convention, and especially when you compare it to the Democratic convention a month ago. At the Democratic convention, you had this very tightly controlled corporate, low-key, reasoned sort of argument. You know, everybody, most of the speakers complained about the fact that that the Kerry people were over-editing their speeches every time they would be critical of the president.
Last night, the muscle was on.
Yeah, last night you had passion, wild idealism, especially when it comes to the war on terror.
Meaning, we will remake the Middle East. We will remake the world.
It's our sacred duty to do all that.
Kind of Wilsonian theme in a very un-Wilsonian party tradition.
That's right. And it was kind of messy and sloppy. They ran over 15 minutes. The Democrats finished on time every night.
Rudy Giuliani was having a little fun there.
What is going on here? This is a major reversal of fortune.
Dana, on this issue of the president's imprint, how do you think historians are going to describe? Of course, September 11th happened, but there was a particular president in the White House when it did. How do you think they're going to describe the imprint of George Bush in his first 4 years? And if there's another four, how might that be deepened, highlighted, sharpened?
Well, it's always impossible to say this in advance, obviously. It could be one of two things. One is this is seen as a time of lost or missed opportunities. After September 11th, the country was extraordinarily unified, and there's a school of thought that said if the president capitalized on that and governed in such a way, he could have remade the entire political system and had a real true governing majority. He went the other way, figuring that that was his best bet to continue on a more partisan path. Now, this basically means he owns all of these policies with the economy, with our various adventures overseas. Now, if these proceed well over the next few years, that could be a great triumph for the Republican Party and for Bush. But if we see increasing terrorism problems overseas, ongoing problems in Iraq, interest rate-related difficulties from the federal deficit at home, ongoing unemployment problems, he's going to take all the blame for that. And then that could it sets us up for a double-or-nothing situation in 2006 and 2008.
Moore Reynolds, and we're only on day two here, but so far in the hall, and there's a lot of people talking, of course, Republicans all over talking with media this week, do you hear being described by the Republicans as they promote President Bush's candidacy for re-election? Do you hear being described what's actually happened? Do you see a full embrace? This is what we wanted. This is what we got. Or, I mean, we didn't want September 11th, but this is the way we would have wanted our president to respond to it. We're happy with this. We're running on it. No hesitation.
I think it's important to realize that most of President Bush's supporters believe in him very, very deeply. I mean, Joe is right when you use the word passion. There's a great deal of passion here. They're not sitting there, at least so far, talking about the nuts and bolts of policy and, I really wish he'd done, something slightly different on Medicare. It's not like that. This is a president who has set forth an agenda that is largely belief-based, and I mean that not only in religious terms or not primarily in religious terms, but political terms and national terms. And it's something that the people here really have bought into, and he appeals to a very emotional side of many of them.
And Dana, what about the prominence of the religious right during these 4 years? They've had a long, steady march to greater prominence in American politics. How would you describe what's happened with that faction, large faction, in these 4 years?
Well, look, when we travel around with the president, that segment is dominant at his rallies. I think they're actually making some effort to hold that down a bit at the convention. In fact, there was a bit of a flap that it appeared there was a cross on the podium, but it was, in fact, an Art Deco design. So it was all a false alarm. But that is the Bush campaign is gambling that this is what they call a base election, that you win this election not by appealing to the middle, but by bringing out more of your people, in this case on the right, who would not necessarily have voted in 2000 or in previous elections. So they're just trying to really rally the faithful here. One thing you're not hearing a lot of, there are occasional nods in that direction, is the notion of changing the tone. That's what 2000 was all about, and overcoming the bitterness of the Clinton years. In fact, even people in the Republican Party say the bitterness, if anything, has increased. Nobody's pretending that the president was able to achieve that, and they're not making that much of a point or of a wish to happen over the next
A prediction
years.
From you, Dana. We've got to let you go in a moment. We can hear the roll call going on the floor of the convention hall. The state's still calling out their votes as they did last night for George Bush and Dick Cheney. If there is a Bush term two, if there's a reelection, do you see that polarization deepening, or do you see President Bush in a second term turning around and being more open-armed toward the opposition?
I think it's too late, even if he turns around and says he's going to be more open-armed because of all the bitterness that's there already. There's all signs are that the Congress is going to be basically where it is now in terms of evenly divided between the two parties. The Democrats will be looking for revenge in 2006, not eager to cooperate with him, particularly because of their experience of the past 4 years. Unfortunately, what we really are going to need is that one party actually becomes dominant.
And if he wins again, that may be exactly what's happening. Grover Norquist today, I heard saying, or he's written, if they win, the Democrats are done. Dana Milbank, thanks for being with us tonight. Dana Milbank with The Washington Post. Joe Klein, Maura Reynolds, stand by. We've got the roll call going on in the background. We're in Madison Square Garden. The Republicans are at their convention. You can join us. How would you sum up the impact of 4 years of George W. Bush? We're at 1-800-423-8255. This is On Point.
North Dakota has 26 votes.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, live from Madison Square Garden in New York City, where the Republican delegates at the Republican National Convention are counting down their state votes for President Bush and Vice President Cheney's re-election campaign, their formal nomination. I think it will take place formally later tonight. We're talking tonight about the impact of the Bush years, as in George W. Bush, the four-year impact of this president. My guest tonight, Maura Reynolds, Los Angeles Times White House correspondent, and Joe Klein, senior writer and political correspondent for Time magazine. You can join us as well. Has this been already an historic presidency? How so? Is George Bush shaping a new America? What does it look like? Is George Bush shaping a new executive branch, a new face of government? How would you describe it? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joe Klein, what about this issue of the government itself? It's not only outside the government there's been an impact, but the Bush administration has shaped the government, the way it behaves, the way it interacts with the people in a particular way. How would you describe it?
Well, I would describe it as radical. If you talk to a shoe store owner in Topeka, Kansas, 10 years ago, classic moderate mainstream Republican, conservative mainstream Republican, and ask him what he believed, he would say, I believe in fiscal responsibility, you balance the budget, and I believe in a strong defense, but I don't want to have any of these wild utopian schemes, attempts to remake the world the way those liberals do. And yet here you have the Bush administration being fiscally wildly irresponsible and also trying to remake the Middle East. So it has been a real departure from traditional conservatism, I think. There's so much that you don't know, that I don't know. I really don't know this country right now. I don't know
What do you mean by that? What about it?
Well, you know, over the last 40 years, up until September 11th, you could build up certain political assumptions. You could say that a candidate with the most money wins the primaries, and there are all these other, you know, you have to have a 52% approval rating to win, and you have to have 2.8% growth to win a re-election. I don't know that any of that stuff applies anymore, because you have this huge issue, the war, and you can't poll for it for various reasons. One is people don't want to say anything ill of the troops. They don't want to say anything ill of the commander-in-chief, and they don't feel competent. They don't feel that they know enough about the situation to judge. But you can just sense, you can sense that it's weighing on them, it's bothering them. I think that, you know, in the Democratic primaries, people said the war was way down on their list of priorities, and yet they picked the one guy who had the best credentials when it came to foreign policy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm kind of at a loss. I really am not sure where the country is, and I'm not sure how this thing's going to turn out.
Well, Reynolds, Joe Klein describes what's come out of the Bush White House, whatever was intended when they came in, as wildly ideological. How do you read that? Is that all a response to September 11th? Was there something nascent here in George W. Bush and the people around him that was looking to do that from the beginning? Dana Milbank described this as a belief-based era that we're in. Is the ideological face accidental as a result of September 11th, or was it baked in the cake with this president?
I think it was latent when he came in, and it was really, you know, baked by the crucible of September 11th. September 11th was a transformative event, and I don't think you can possibly overstate that. This is a president who, when he was a candidate, when he gave his acceptance speech, for the 2000 election, talked about how he, you know, didn't believe in nation building, had a very realist, modest approach towards foreign policy. But if you read those speeches, and if you read the speeches and the writings of his national security advisor, Condoleezza Rice, at the same time, there's also a strain of idealism in it. But it is underneath the realism. And then you read the way their language has changed after September 11th, the idealism, the moralistic way of looking at the world, of formulating foreign policy, comes very much to the fore. So I don't think you can say that it wasn't there before. It was, but it was really, really developed and baked in afterwards. And I think the same is true somewhat less so on domestic policy. But this is a president who believes that principle should always trump pragmatics, and he does not like to compromise for the sake of compromise. Look at what he did with the dividend tax cut. 50%, if 50% is good enough, then why isn't 100% good enough? He doesn't like to make half measures when he can make whole measures. I think that was also part of his personality, and it was also enhanced by September 11th.
And on the floor of the convention hall right now, the spotlights are swirling. The delegate count has just put George Bush over at the top. He will be the nominee of the Republican Party. No surprise in that. You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. We're talking about the impact of Bush years. Let's get a call. Marianne is calling from Newburyport, Massachusetts. Hi, Marianne. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Good to have you.
I guess I have to assess the impact of the Bush administration in very personal terms for me this year. His policies have impacted me directly in many, many ways. For the first time in 25 years, I've been without a job. I was out of work for over a year. Lost my health insurance for the first time in my life. Wound up going to a hospital without health insurance. When I finally did get a job, earning $14,000 less a year, I am now strapped with this health medical bill that I have
right,
to pay
right,
off.
We can imagine that, yep.
In addition, after all of that, George Bush sent my nephew into Iraq in March, last March, and So I think you folks are really underestimating the real personal impact and that his administration has had on people. When I hear things like compassionate conservatism, I think back last Christmas of 2003, when he failed to do anything to extend the unemployment benefits and Congress recessed without doing so, and I
yeah.
was left wondering how I was going to hold on to my house.
So it hasn't been a good 4 years for you. You sound like Exhibit A for the Democrats,
right.
Marianne.
And
sort of everything in one package.
Right. And I would like to say that, you folks really have to give a lot of thought to people like me. My brother, who is a registered Democrat because of the experience with my nephew, has changed his party affiliation, and he is voting against George Bush.
That would be the father of your nephew who has gone to Iraq. Marianne, we've got it. We've got the picture, loud and clear, a whole lot there in one package. Thanks for calling in. Joe Klein, we've just heard them chanting on the floor, 4 more years. You hear Marianne saying she's had quite enough in her particular case. If there are 4 more years, what are you expecting?
It's hard to know. One of the things that you hear in the foreign policy community now and the military community is the sense that Iraq is pretty much gone and that the next president is going to have some sort of a staged withdrawal from the place.
Gone meaning?
Meaning that the population is united in its opposition to us, that they're going to have to solve their problems on their own. I don't know that that's a wise course of action. In fact, I think it's probably a very unwise course of action.
It's certainly not what we heard from the podium last night or anywhere in this hall by the main speakers or mouthpieces
right.
This week.
But that is that's a common impression that you get from not only soldiers coming back from there, but our colleagues who've been in Iraq. You have that. You have the likelihood that Iran is going to get a bomb.
I.e., Tehran developing a nuclear weapon,
and that they're in the process of doing it, who wouldn't if you were in their position? You have these very serious turns in foreign policy that are ahead, and the reality is going to sink in here that this really is a long-term struggle, that's going to require sacrifice of a sort that the president hasn't yet asked the American people and may well have to in the next 4 years. On the domestic front, you have this very iffy economy, and you have increasing questions about the impact of China in particular, but also the rest of the third world, on our economy.
You mean competition from China?
Not just in terms of competition, not just in terms of lower prices for goods and manufacturing jobs going overseas, but they're beginning to use so much of basic commodities.
Oil, like wood, aluminum, you
name it. That prices are going up. Mm-hmm. So we're having, in some ways, the worst of two out of three worlds. We're having higher commodity prices, higher gas prices. We're losing jobs, but we get lower prices at Walmart. And these are the kind of decisions that we're going to have to make as a society that really aren't being discussed in this campaign.
The vote count goes on. Let's get another call. Angela's calling from Asheville, North Carolina. Hi, Angela. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for letting me talk.
Sure. Welcome.
I think there's almost enough to talk about to last for a week if I continued. What I want to mention is about compassion. I hear the Bush administration talking about this new compassionate president and their policy. And I just haven't seen a whole lot of that. As a Buddhist, compassion is extremely important to me. And I know that there are many Christians that also feel that compassion comes first.
But Angela, let me ask you. George Bush says, look, we went into the schools and we laid down standards that respect the students there. We looked at the pharmaceuticals for the elderly with Medicare. We brought in new legislation that cuts costs for some elderly on their medicines. We've gone with compassion into Iraq, President Bush says, to liberate those people from a tyrant. What do you see there?
I do believe that there is a certain amount of compassion in his words, but the actions... He can talk all he wants about the elderly and you know, laying compassion in schools. I think it's all politically motivated. I haven't seen peace at the forefront. To me, compassion is more about listening and understanding to the people that we're attacking. While we're killing them, we might want to stop and look in their eyes and ask the question, why are they so angry at us? Why are we in this conflict? And get to the point of conflict and not just pull out a gun and shoot.
Angela,
you might want to, as the public, too, begin to look at what are the motivations behind this war. Was it really about compassion or was it really about money?
Angela, we've got it. Thanks for calling in. Well, Reynolds, on this front, looking ahead to another administration, if there is another Bush administration, what about the team? Who do you see staying? Who do you see going based on their performance, on their relationship with the president in Bush term one?
Well, I don't think the president wants to lose anyone. I mean, he's very, very loyal to his people. He loves them a great deal, and he only trusts a handful of people. So he would very much like to keep his team more or less in place. That's not going to happen. I mean, there's tremendous pressures on people who work in the White House to leave after one term. One is just simply burnout and or boredom. I mean, these jobs are very, very demanding. Those of us who cover the White House see it. They work harder than we do.
So who's burned out, who's bored, who's going?
Well, part of it is a personal calculation on who wants to try to make money in the private sector, and that I can't guess. On the national security front, almost everyone is agreed and that Senator Pell will leave with the end of this term. Senator Pell. Secretary of State Colin Powell has had it and will be gone at the end of this term.
Don Rumsfeld?
Wants to outlast Secretary Powell. So by whatever amount, I'm not sure. I think most people thought he'd stay for about a year of a second term, but now that the Abu Ghraib scandal has broken and that's inching ever closer to the Secretary's office, he may have to leave sooner than that.
Condoleezza Rice, her poll numbers, to the extent that matters, and maybe it doesn't, President Bush is loyal, as you say, they're not high.
She does not want to stay in her current job as National Security Advisor. The question is whether she would be better suited as a Secretary of State or a Secretary of Defense. If we're placing bets, I don't
claim to have any particular knowledge of this, but my guess is that she would prefer to be Secretary of Defense, and I think the President would really love to appoint an African-American woman as Secretary of Defense. That's exactly the kind of bold move that would appeal to him on many different levels. Whether that actually happens or not remains to be seen.
Wow, there's a picture. Keir is calling from Greensboro, North Carolina. Hi, Keir, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Just fine. What's on your mind, Keir?
I'm a strong supporter of President Bush. I served under his father in the Gulf War. I'm glad that he had the strength to take us to Iraq. I have a 19-year-old son who's prepared to go if he were called. Our whole family loves the president. We are very confident that he'll win. There's no doubt in my mind.
And what do you love about him? What do you love about the imprint, the impact he's had on the country, Keir?
I feel that we have a strong economy, regardless of what some of your listeners have been saying. I've been able to make more money in the past 4 years than I have ever made in my life. And I have a working job. I'm not a high-paid leader.
Yep.
I'm a construction worker. And I'm very pleased with the economy. I'm pleased with the turn that our education system has taken. It's all thumbs up here.
So it's a big thumbs up from Greensboro. Keir, thanks for your call. Joe Klein. Keir is by no means alone. The polls right now are not looking too
bad.
I mean, it's still neck and neck. It could go either way, but they're not looking badly for George Bush compared to where they were a month ago.
Yeah, I think that the president's probably in a very strong position at this point. And there are a lot of people who, you know, just out of patriotic reason, support the war in Iraq. And for at least, you know, for a great many people, the economy is working right now. And also, you cannot underestimate the importance of a number of social issues like abortion, gay marriage, and just the general kind of loose state of our entertainment world.
Pushing them toward George Bush's conservatism.
And that would appeal to them the same way that there are an equal number of people, just about an equal number of people, who believe that there is a right to an abortion and that gay marriage is up to the two people involved and so on.
We just got a minute left with you, Joe. What happens on the other side of this election, either way, with either victory, with that divided country you're describing?
Well, I'm really afraid. I'm really fearful, no matter who wins, that the other side is not going to live with it. And they're just going to spend all their time trying to tear down whomever the eventual victor is. I'm really concerned about the fact that too many of the people in our profession and also in politics are still playing this as if it were September 10th.
Meaning with inadequate seriousness?
With inadequate seriousness. And I think that there's an awful lot of educating to be done. The public really has to learn an awful lot more about Islam. And we have to be humble in a way that George W. Bush proposed in 2000. I just don't see that. I see a lot of arrogance on both sides in this election.
We are at Madison Square Garden. The Republican National Convention is going on, as you can hear. The delegate count is in the background and proceeding, but the numbers have already come in for George Bush. Talking tonight about the impact of the Bush years, as in George W. Bush, the four-year impact of this presidency. Joe Klein, thanks so much for being with us tonight. Great to have you joining us. Joe Klein, senior writer and political correspondent for Time Magazine. Maura Reynolds, stick with us. We've got a lot more callers here. You're welcome to join us at 1-800-423-8255. What is the legacy of 4 years of George W. Bush? What do you think the legacy of 8 years would be? Is this a radical presidency? 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back from Madison Square Garden. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, live from Madison Square Garden in New York, where the Republican National Convention is underway on the floor of the Garden tonight. A delegate count has been going on for a couple of days. Later tonight, Elizabeth Dole will speak, Bill Frist, Education Secretary Rod Page, and, of course, the headliners for the night, California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger and First Lady Laura Bush. You can join our conversation tonight. We're talking about the impact of the Bush years, as in George W. Bush. We're at 1-800-423-8255. How would you sum up the impact of 4 years of George Bush? Is George Bush shaping a new America? What does it look like? And is this a radical presidency? Is that a good thing or is that a problem? We're at 1-800-423-TALK. There have been a lot of protests again today, not as big as on Sunday, but vigorous. We're joined now from Herald Square, very near Madison Square Garden, where Luke Burbank, reporter for WNYC, is on his cell phone. Luke Burbank, can you hear us there?
I can, Tom. Can you hear me?
Yes, you're coming through. Luke, what have you seen out on the protest front today?
Well, I can start with where I am right now, which is, as you said, Herald Square. This is about as close to Madison Square Garden as the protesters are going to get. And every single corner here at the intersection of 34th and 6th Avenue is absolutely packed with people. The police have erected these metal barricades that we've come to know and love here in New York in the last few days. And what that means is that people, as they fill in on the sidewalks, can't actually cross the street. So they sort of have pressure building and building and building. A few people have run into the street and been arrested so far.
Luke, this is right outside of Macy's that you're describing, Macy's department store. This was supposed to be Direct Action Day. Has it had a different flavor than Sunday's protests?
Well, yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that people today have had much less compunction about squaring off with police. The word from the police department is that there have been about 240 arrests already today, which is much more than the previous day, even though there have actually fewer people out protesting than there were on Sunday. I had an interesting conversation yesterday with a protester at this rally called Still We Rise. He was essentially champing at the bit to get out and mix it up with police, and he was actually upset at the organizers of the Still We Rise protest, feeling like they were being a little bit too cooperative with the police. So, yeah, today has a different flavor.
Well, Luke, let me ask you, what does it take? What's it taking to get arrested in New York City today? What's making the police go ahead and make that arrest? We haven't heard about fires or smashed windows. So what gets an arrest?
Well, it kind of depends on what cops you're squaring off with. I've noticed where I just was at the New York City Library, where there were about 45 people arrested. There seemed to actually be a little bit of chaos on the police side. They weren't being overtly rough with people, but they did not really all seem to be on the same page. You have one police officer that would yell at people to leave the sidewalk and cross the street or be arrested, and then the different officer would yell at people when they tried to cross the street and pin them up and arrest them. So it really depends. I mean, mostly, if you're somewhere, the police warn you, and if you don't jump quickly, you have a good chance of being wearing plastic wrist cuffs.
The plastic handcuffs come in a hurry. You're breaking up a bit, Luke, but thanks a lot for joining us tonight from the streets outside Madison Square Garden.
Glad to do it, Tom.
Luke Burbank, reporter for WNYC, covering protests in New York today. This hour, we're talking about the four-year impact of George W. Bush. Maura Reynolds is with us, White House correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. You can join us as well at 1-800-423-8255. Stan is calling from Sacramento, California. Hi, Stan. You're on the air. Stan, are you there? We may have lost Stan. Let's turn to Helen calling from Laurel, Mississippi. Hello, Helen. Are you there?
Hello. I'm here. Thank you.
Hi. What's on your mind tonight, Helen?
Well, I just have several points that y'all have not addressed. Number one is that Bush lies. You can't depend on him to tell the truth. The WMDs were never found because they were never there. And so far as compassion, in our state, we just had 69,000 people taken off of Medicaid and Medicare. I personally have friends who can afford no health insurance. They're single mothers and can't find a job. There's no compassion there. And
Helen, let me ask you something. You're from a part of the country that is pretty staunchly behind George W. Bush. Why? How do you interpret that?
Well, I think at home, quite frankly, it's considered the socially accepted party. It's considered more of the society thing to do.
And why is that? Why is that, Helen?
Well, there is a great disparity between the haves and the have-nots since Bush has taken over the White House, and it's getting greater and greater. And I think people, quite frankly, are afraid to say they're Democrats, but I've also seen just in the last week a big change in that. Now, I was a Republican campaign manager for Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't vote Republican at all, because I think their entire philosophy has changed. It's the rich get richer and let the poor get poorer, and they don't care.
We've got it there, Helen. The word from Laurel, Mississippi. Thanks very much for calling in. Moore Reynolds, there's an interesting idea. In Helen's part of the country, she describes people as afraid to say they're Democrats, a kind of a social pressure that you won't find in New York, where Democrats outnumber Republicans sort of 5-1, if the 2000 vote is any indication. You've been around the country. Do you sense this? Do you feel it? How does social pressure come in here?
Well, I think party identification is a very complicated matter. It has not just to do with what's in your pocketbook. I mean, that's sort of a facile thing that people assume, that if you're better off now than you were 4 years ago, that you're likely to vote for the incumbent. In fact, party identification has a lot to do with where your family came from, what your sense of personal identity is in society. And we've seen a huge shift in the country, especially in the South, especially in places like Mississippi, where people who were traditionally Democrats, whose friends and whose parents and whose social structure were Democratic, were Southern Democrats, have shifted to the Republican Party. And I don't think Helen is wrong about that. Another thing on the whether the country is doing better economically or not, there's a huge disparity between different regions of the country. And so if you look at the jobless figures, for instance, there are states that are doing quite well. Some of them are swing states. And there are states that are doing quite poorly or about the same in the last 4 years. And so looking at the overall unemployment number, which is what the Republicans like to do, and looking at overall job creation numbers, doesn't really tell you what's happening on the ground in places, especially the Midwestern states like Ohio and Missouri and maybe even in Mississippi.
It's a real checkerboard out there.
Absolutely.
Helen, thanks for calling in from Mississippi. We can hear the Republicans mixing it up with a musical interlude on the floor right now. They're celebrating in this hall tonight. Spring is calling from Panama City, Florida. Hi, Spring. You're on the air.
Hi.
What's on your mind, Spring?
I have to disagree with Helen. I am a Republican, but I haven't always been. I was raised Democratic and liberal. I'm a military spouse, and everyone I know, my friends who are all military spouses and the military members, are totally behind President Bush. We do believe that we needed to go into Iraq. You know, there was, sufficient reason to do that. It was, not a lie, and there was no reason to do that.
So you're solid for the president, and when you and the people in the military community look out at what's happened in Iraq since the troops went in, are you still solid with the president, or are you concerned about that?
I am not concerned. A lot of things that are not seen from the media and are not told are the people who are very happy that we're there, that we helped them, that they do get freedom coming, and they don't have to live scared. You know, there is a big impact that we've made on, saving our freedom and giving them theirs.
That sounds like what we heard from Rudy Giuliani and John McCain last night. Spring, thanks very much for calling in from Panama City. Moore Reynolds, this issue of the military, we heard Joe Klein say earlier that at the level that he mixes with the military, sort of high level, he's hearing a lot of grumbling and unease with Iraq. Yet, what I've seen of the polls shows, as Spring reports from Florida, pretty solid rank-and-file support for this president in many parts of military service. How do you interpret that?
Well, I think that people in the military tend to appreciate discipline and order. This is a very disciplined president. He's one that has a great sense of propriety, and he's culturally more in sync with them. That said, there is also a class of military who are known as rhinos, Republican in name only, who are sort of socially Republican but have increasing problems on the ground. Those of us who've worked in war zones know that that I haven't been to Iraq, but I spent time in Afghanistan,
yeah.
that when soldiers are on the ground in Iraq, they often have very mixed feelings. They often believe in their cause, but get very frustrated with the way that it's actually conducted on the ground. And so I think it's very important for military families to feel that the country is behind them, to express solidarity, and the last thing they want to do is question the goals of a war. But that uniformity of support for the troops and support for the commander-in-chief doesn't always hold true on the ground in countries and certainly among the elite who worry about the details of policy.
And if we want to talk about the impact of the Bush presidency so far, clearly the impact on the U.S. military has just been enormous.
Well, and there is a large number. Military families have had a very hard time, and I've been with the president to military bases and interviewed families, and you know, I have to say, a majority support the policy, support the intervention in Iraq, but there is an undercurrent of tension over the price that it has taken on their families, on the casualties, the losses, and you know, many people did not believe that they would have these huge year-long deployments.
And many sent back again.
Yeah, it's impossible to understate the impact on those families and those communities. And I have talked to military wives and other people who expressed concern about the commitment that we've made to be there for the long term and what that will mean for their families and whether it was really a wise move.
Well, so. The military lauded last night from the podium by both McCain and Giuliani, of course, heavily from the president in Nashville today. They are exacting a big price. They've got to speak out warmly toward that, toward those military servicemen. Kevin's calling from Raleigh, North Carolina. Hi, Kevin. You're on the air.
Hi, everyone. I'm a Bush voter, I guess. I don't know if I'd say supporter to the fullest extent, but
okay.
I'm conservative in some areas. I'm pro-life, and in some fiscal areas, I'm very conservative. But I think what Bush has done is made some big mistakes. I think 9/11 took the Democrats' argument out of it. See, in the Clinton years, the Republicans kept Clinton in check, and they worked together on a lot more things. I think Bush started out as more of a moderate, partnering with Ted Kennedy on education. The big thing that happened, though, I think 9/11, some people thought it gave Bush a blank check. He's touted as being fiscally conservative, and I don't agree with raising taxes. The more taxes I pay as I get older, but he took away the revenue stream that allowed our you know, country to have a balanced budget.
So, Kevin, you're a Bush. You're going to vote for Bush, you say, but you're having a hard time describing yourself as a supporter. Are you in any sense a swing voter? Are you movable, or you're solid even though you've got misgivings?
I don't think I'm a swing voter, and the reason is, and I know I'm not. The reason is because I supported Bush militarily in the war in Iraq. I think they didn't plan enough for the post-war Iraq, but I believe, as people have been saying, that Bush is a very principled person, and I know what I'm getting with Bush. The thing that makes me uneasy about John Kerry is, as I've seen him throughout the last 2 years, I don't think you really know who you're getting with John Kerry.
Kevin, we've got it, and we hear where your vote's going. We're just about out of time, but thanks for your call tonight. More Reynolds, you can see them partying on the floor right now. A kind of an interlude, a lot coming up here with Senator Elizabeth Dole, Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist, Education Secretary Rod Page, and later in the evening, Arnold Schwarzenegger and the First Lady, Laura Bush. How about the history book question for you, More Reynolds, just in the minute we've got left? Do you think we will look back on this as an historic presidency?
Oh, I don't think there's any question about that, even if he doesn't win a second term. 9/11 really was the beginning of the 21st century. I don't think that there's any way that historians won't look at it that way. And the way Bush decided to deal with it, and especially the decision to expand the war on terror from Afghanistan to Iraq, was, I think, a decision whose consequences we won't fully anticipate for very, very many years.
Maura Reynolds, it is always terrific to speak with you. Thanks so much for joining us
in
Madison Square Garden. Great to have you. Maura Reynolds, Los Angeles Times White House correspondent. We are coming to you live tonight from Madison Square Garden in New York City. The Republican National Convention is underway. Lots more speakers to come tonight. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.